For tonight we have Ruth. Let me see, we did Rahab to start with, and then we did Abigail, and now we will do Ruth. And I told you, I was flipping through the Bible, and it just seemed like I gravitated to the women stories. I don't know why, but that's the way it is, all right? So there, and it's the book of Ruth, and in your Bible, it's just past, I think, Judges, Joshua, Judges. Well, I mean, you have the five books of the law, and you have Joshua, Judges, and then I think it's Ruth is right there. Four chapters, pretty short book, with lots of good stuff in it. So, and we will not try to read the whole entire book tonight, but hopefully we'll hit the high spots and for discussion and that kind of thing. And let me suggest to you to do that reading on your own. You know, just open up, read it, and especially like the book of Ruth, real short. And it's a story that's complete, and so you know you got to start, then you got to finish, and you got it's complete, and so you can go with that. Again, it's not real heavy reading, but you'll see things will come out of the book. If you read the book of Ruth, you'll see things come out that you wouldn't see catch otherwise. Okay. And there's a lot of undertow in the book. I just warn you that there is a lot of cultural things in the book that just don't make a lot of sense to us, okay, but was really important to them. I'll try to point some of those out as we go, so you get it. Now, one of the reasons why Ruth jumped off the pages of the Bible to me is she is one of the four women that are mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus. I'm not counting Mary, okay? Mary's mentioned, okay. There are four other women mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus: Rahab, Tamar, Ruth, and Bathsheba. Okay, and I've already done Tamar extensively when we went through Genesis, which not terribly long ago, so I left Tamar out of this, but we do have Rahab, and we have Ruth, and we will later have Bathsheba as a great Bible story. So I'm looking at this, okay, and I know she's a Moabite from Moab, okay. And Jews would love to make fun of Moabites. I mean, it was part of that. And the reason they would do that, or the material that they had, was if you know where Moabites come from, they come out of the incestuous relationship between Lot and his daughters. And so the Moabites come out of that. So Jews just love to make fun of Moabites, what a terrible beginning you got, you know, that kind of thing. And so they were really looked down upon. They were really racist during this time. I mean, tribal clans and all that kind of thing, they were really that way. But here's what happened. I looked, now here she's a Moabite. And then she appears in the genealogy of Jesus Christ. That's how important she is. How does that happen? I want to know how that happened. Now, why would I want to know that? I want to do the right thing. I want to do the right thing. So we'll try to learn from Ruth. Okay? We'll try to learn some of her secrets. Now, how do you make that happen? That is, she's a nobody, and then she's an indispensable part of bringing Jesus here on earth. Okay? So, with that, with that type of introduction. Oh, this is during the time of Judges. This is before the monarchy, before they have a king, before King Saul and before David. Okay, this is before that. Okay, they were governed by what we would call a tribal federation. If they needed a bunch of people to try to protect, maybe from the Philistines, which they were not really all that successful, they would have to appeal to tribes. And so the chief of the tribe or the head of that tribe would have to say okay and then give in. You know, I'll just say it was a really difficult type of leadership. But that's what they had. And they were, I guess you could call, we have charismatic leaders. But they were charismatic. They like rose up, did their job, and then disappeared. Sometimes they hang on and that kind of thing. To mention a couple of them, Gideon. Gideon arose for a specific occasion, and then he goes away. That was the kind of leadership that they had during this time. Okay, so you had just different tribes ruling themselves. All right, and it mentions what tribe that Naomi's from and the area that she's from in the book, okay? Let's read our introduction. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. And, oh, by the way, if you're looking up Moab, Moab is on the east side, right down there, close to the Dead Sea. And Bethlehem is on the other side of the Dead Sea and up in the mountains, that kind of thing. So it's a pretty good distance. The man's name was... Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of the two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephraimites, that is from the tribe of Ephraim. And they get their name because Ephraim and Manasseh are the sons of Joseph. Joseph loses his place or his. And his two sons become their own tribe. So Ephraim from Bethlehem of Judah, and they went to Moab to live there. Now it's interesting that famine causes them to move around. And right now in the world today, we're just about to stop any sense of famine ever happening. I shouldn't say ever. Right now. You don't hear about famines much anymore, do you? The last one was like Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. What would you say? Sudan? Okay. And the reason I say that is not that the weather is always good, but we'll ship food in there. And if the government is not terribly corrupt and steals everything, which happens a lot, the people will get fed. So famine is almost a thing of the past. And that was really interesting to me because you see here it's forcing people to move around. And was really interesting to me is why I did. I looked at South America, and because they had quite a few famines. We'll call them Indians for lack of a better word, would have a pretty good culture going here, and a famine would just wipe them out. And what I wanted to look at is how do people deal with famine? And what is their response to famine? Okay, now we got it here, and it's going to come up again later, their response to famine. Okay, where did the famine come from? Well, they think it come from God. We'll see that a little later, okay? I hope I remember to point that out to you. But there was a famine, and because of that, people are moving around. And Elimelech and his wife left and went up there, their two sons with them. Okay, we'll go to the next slide now. Now, Elimelech and Naomi's husband died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah, the other named Ruth, and after they had lived there about 10 years, so it's a pretty good time. They're over there. I don't know whether they're keeping up with it. The famine lasting 10 years or what they're doing there. Okay. Both Mahlon and Chilion also died. We don't know why they died. It doesn't say disease. And you would think three men in a row dying there that would have maybe to do with some war or something. We don't have that. Just that they're gone. And Naomi was left with her two sons and her husband. They're gone. No, we have another verse on this part too. No. Okay. They're gone. They're just gone. We don't know what happened to them. Okay. Journey back home. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them. See, one of the problems we have reading in the Old Testament is because we don't understand that evil comes from God. Okay, they had what we call strict monotheism. Everything come from God. Okay, famine come from God, so when it's broke, God breaks the famine. They just saw everything come from God. What we really point this out to you is when you're reading about Saul, and it will say, the evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. You remember reading that one? What do you do with that? I have a hard time computing that. So I try to work, but I'm just saying that's a way. So the famine, where would the famine come from? The Lord, in their mind. Okay. She and her daughters-in-laws prepared to return home from there with her two daughter-in-laws. She left the place there that she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Now, it seems like it's told a little bit backwards here to me, but that's the way it is. Okay, so she's going to do what? She's going home. Why? Famine's over. Famine's over, so she's going to go home. But no husband, no sons, and she's got two daughters-in-law. What do you do? Okay. Just Naomi and Ruth. At this, they wept aloud. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. Ruth may have not been able to go home. There might not have been a home for her to go to. But Orpah must have a home to go to, and her father's going to let her come in now. People didn't just go to one family like they can now. Okay? Because we do pretty good. They may not be able to feed that extra mouth that comes to them. And especially a widow. You know, what are you going to do with her? Yeah. If you go, you know, find a husband for her, good luck with that. You know. So, sister-in-law go back to her people and where's she going? To her gods. And once I point that out to you, go back. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. See, she's making a choice here. From the gods of the Moabites to the God of, we'll say, of the Israelites, or the Jewish God. And so she's taking... Have you ever heard this read at a marriage ceremony? Huh? Yeah. But it's actually between two women, Ruth and Naomi. But it to me, it's widely read at marriage ceremonies. Yeah. But it is a great commitment on her part. It is. She's committing herself to Naomi and to the God of the Israelites. Is what she's doing. To me, there's a big, and she's going to leave her home. I mean, this is a big deal, okay? And to set out on the road for two women, I'm telling you. And I assume what happened is, they would join a caravan some way to get over there. I don't know how they did that. We don't have that. But for two women on the road would be really dangerous. But they had a way to do that. Okay. Did that end up that point, just Naomi, Ruth? Okay. Naomi, where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So, okay, we'll make the best of this, and now we got two women on the road going back home, and they get back home. It was a pretty good trip. If you look at it on a map, it's a pretty good trip. I don't know how you get across the Dead Sea. They would probably go up one side, go across, and come back down on the other side, but I don't know. It just, if you look at it, you know they would want to stay in the green. If you have a colored map, they would want to stay in the green, is what they want. Okay, Boaz and Ruth meet. You know, you hear about people meeting on these dating sites now. You hear about that? Yeah, they all meet on these dates. It works for some folks. Every once in a while, you'll hear somebody working really well. I want to bring it up, but what are you guys whispering about? Oh, you guys met on a dating site, huh? Oh, good for you. There! I believe in love. That's good. All I want to point out to you is you have to have a way to get together. And you'll find out that every culture actually they have ways in which they do that. Okay, and I just want you to pay attention to that, all right? And so we know they're going to get together. We know the end of the story. Okay, Boaz, Ruth's going to get together. But how do they do that? How do they get together? And I'm really interested in this. What Ruth does. Who is this person, Ruth? I mean, marvelous. Okay? Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, "Let me go into the fields and pick up what is left over grain behind anyone in whose eyes I found favor." Naomi said, "Go ahead, my daughter." Now, the way this is set up to me, when I read this, okay, who do we bring up first here? Boaz. So we bring up Boaz, and then we say, well, she's going to go glean, and you know, are you familiar with gleaning? There was some combines named gleaners at one time, yeah. You were only... By law, you only made one pass over the field. And whatever grain was left to the poor people like Ruth here. And she would come in and glean. Okay? Okay, let's go to the next one. So she went out and entered her field and began to glean behind harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz. Now, how does that happen? It seems to me a put-up job. That's all I'm saying, okay? Who's the puppeteer? Who's the person behind the scene? Yes. Excellent, Lisa. Naomi. And every young person needs mentors in their life. And you'll find that probably even in a juncture of your own life where you made big junctures, that somebody was there to give you a hand, a pointer, or something to help you along your way. Okay? And that's what Naomi becomes now, is a mentor for Ruth. Okay? Okay. Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just when Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters, "The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you," they answered. Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, "Who does that young woman belong to?" Uh-oh. She's already what? Yes, that's a good one. That's exactly the way I would put it. Yeah. And so Boaz said, "Oh, who's that?" Well, that's not a bad thing to be. Not yet, but yeah. Yeah. But there's something now. It's caught his eye. Yeah. Go ahead. You heard me. I tried to say that a while ago, but no, not about those two. Okay, but that is important, and I'm glad you see that. Like the widow that went back home over the Orpha was her name. Like she went back. What do you do with her? Because she's not a virgin, and it's pretty hard to marry one of them off. That's what makes this story more miraculous to me, because that becomes non-issue, and I like that about the story, because there's deeper things going on than that. In other words, that is not a real hindrance for her. Okay. Who's that woman? Boaz now gives special instructions. Now, there's a little bit in between here, okay? We're not reading everything, all right? So Boaz says to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go glean in another field, and don't go away from here." Why that? I'm sorry? He wants her to stay. And she will have his protection if she stays. It can be very dangerous, especially for a woman. Okay? It can be very dangerous. So he's telling her, stay here. And if she does, she'll be under his protection. If she does. Watch the field where the men are harvesting. Follow along after the women. I have told the men what? Not to lay a hand on you. And I'm telling you, that would be followed to the letter. Okay? And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars that the men have filled. That's a big deal. So what's he doing for Ruth? I'm sorry? Yes, he is. Yeah. And he's paving the road right for her. That's what he's doing. He's paving the road for her. Okay. All right, go to the next one. At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Her humility comes out. This may be not just niceties here. She may not know. Now, Jerry hit that right off, but about caught her eye. Somebody over here said the same thing, caught her eye. But, yeah. We know what's it operating. She may not know. She may not understand any of what the dynamics are going on here. We do. Well, of course, we're standing back. We're reading, too. But, right. Yeah. She was there to pick up grain, and that's what she's going to do is pick up grain. She may not really know. I being ignorant here, I don't know. I really think she may not understand all the dynamics of it. Okay? She doesn't have to, does she? They work irregardless of whether she knows it or not. That's one thing about the world. Okay, so she's got special instructions from Boaz. Does it sound like she'll follow those special instructions? Yeah, what it sounds like. Okay. Now, she doesn't have to. She could just get all bulled up and say, "I don't have to do what that man tells me to do." No, you don't. You're exactly right. But what will that get you? What will that get you? And this is my favorite point. Let's have lunch. This is the one I like the best, okay? This is the one I like the best, okay? Yeah. I think we're having lunch. That's what I think. Yes, exactly. I think we're having lunch. If she doesn't know it, I'm telling her. I understand. I get this. Okay, we're having lunch. Oh, he'll pay. That was good, Kim. That was really good. I like that. Yeah. All right. At mealtime, Boaz said, "Come over here. Have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. I'm not exactly sure what that is, that roasted grain. Must be some kind of, it's a food stuff, okay, but eating that hard grain, I don't know. They had some way to which they did that. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. Now that's a big deal. That's a big deal. This is a person been living hand to mouth for a long time now. And to have all the food you want and have some left over, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. Boaz gave orders to the men, "Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her." Seemed to me like my translation had "don't embarrass her." I think it's what mine had. "Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even put some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up and don't rebuke her." Now, this is the boss talking here. This guy's running the show. And what does he say? That's what I'm hearing. That's what I'm hearing. Make it easy for her. You make mistakes that leave some behind in the right spot, and she'll clean up. Yeah, she, boy, does to me, too. I hear it. Okay. I hear it. All right? it just sounds to me like we've had a pretty successful lunch. Pretty successful lunch. Yes. I just love the whole thing. I just think it's darling. Okay. I just think the whole thing is darling. Okay. All right. Yeah. And that she may not have caught on yet. Huh? Show us to move on. Okay. Naomi learns what's going on. Now, who's Naomi? Remember who she is? This is the mentor. And she has to figure out what's going on before she can say, do this. Okay. Her mother-in-law asked her, where did you glean today? Where did you were? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. The name of the man I worked with today was Boaz. Well, the Lord bless him, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead, she added. That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers. Yeah. Kinsman redeemers, who is a technical, I'm going to use that as a technical term, okay, the kinsman redeemer. If you want to look that kinsman redeemer up in the law, it's Leviticus 25, around verse 47 through 55 in the law. We're not going to read that tonight, okay? But the kinsmen, the Jews didn't treat property like we do, okay? Property was allocated to the tribes and to the clans, okay? And it was not owned forever. It was owned as long as you lived it, or lived on it, or as long as you lived, or you sold it. But even if you sold it, that person could not keep that property forever. It had to go back to the original tribe that it was allocated to. Have you heard of the Year of Jubilee? That's what the Year of Jubilee was. Year of Jubilee, everything went back to the original owner. It was so no tribe, no clan would ever be destitute for over one generation. Okay, that at the end. And that's what that is. And he has the right to redeem Naomi's ground. Elimelech. He has the right to do that. And he cannot be refused. I don't care who owns it. He cannot be refused. You can't refuse him to do that. Okay. If he is a blood relative, if he is willing, and it sounds like he's getting willing here, and if he's able to pay the price, which he is, then he can redeem it. And this is carried over into Jesus Christ as well. Can you hear Jesus Christ in there? Is he a relative? Yes, he's a human being. Is he willing? Yes. He fought that out at the last moment in the Garden of Gethsemane when he says, "Thy will, not mine, be done." So he was. Could he pay the price? Yes. He was without sin, so he could pay the price. So he's uniquely what we term as kinsman redeemer. He's kin and he is a redeemer. And Naomi knows the law. She knows what can happen here. And she's going to help it along if she can. And she will. Because she is the wise person here. We're going to do Esther here one of these. I don't know when. I don't remember where Esther is on the list. We're going to do Esther. Esther has Mordecai, her uncle, who is the mentor for her, and tells her, because she's young, and it's like Ruth here is young and really doesn't know. Okay, Naomi's wise instruction. All right. One day, Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, I must find a home for you where you will be well provided for. Now, Boaz, with whose women you have been working, is a relative of ours. Tonight, he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor." How does she know that? Well, she knows it's the harvest. She knows what goes on there. She knows what's going to happen. Okay? On threshing floor. "Wash and put on perfume." Oh. "And get dressed in your best clothes. Go down to the threshing floor. But don't let him know you are there unless he has finished eating and drinking." Now, why do you think wait till he's been eating and drinking? He'll be in a better mood. He will be in a better mood when he's been eating and drinking. Remember Abigail? Yeah. You had to wait till he sobered up, boy. Okay. "When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. Now, what's her mother-in-law doing? Telling her how to act, what to do, what? Oh, boy. Oh, it is rather blind, because they're actually in the dark, can't see. And that's part of what happens here. She was told to. Now, there's some cultural things going on here. I can't pick them out too well, okay? But you know what I mean? There's cultural things going on here, okay? See, what she has to do is she has to communicate to Boaz that she is available. Once she does that, she has to communicate to him another thing, is that she's available to him. There's a difference. Okay? And we've been picking out her way. And what's she doing here? She's saying, "I'm available to you." This is not general anymore. This is, "I am available to you." Okay? Boaz responds. "Bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out." When she did so, he poured into it 6 measures of barley, placed the bundle on her, and he went back to town. Then Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi, and asked, "Naomi, how did it go, my daughter?" She wants to know all the gory details. How did things go? What happened? Yeah. All right. Go to the next one. Is this the next one? She told her everything Boaz had done. Sorry about that, Chris. And added, he gave me 6 measures of barley, saying, "Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed." Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today." Now, what would you call Naomi? A wise woman. Okay. I don't very often get to talk to guys like this, or women, you know, but I tell, if you can communicate to your significant male partner what it is you want. And if he doesn't move heaven and earth to get it, you got the wrong man. You got the wrong man. Because just like this, this is the way the world works. He will not rest till he does what? Has everything accomplished. He will not rest till he does that. And there's a lot of things he's got to do. I think we're going to read most of them. Okay. A lot of things he has to do to make this happen. And he is scurrying about to get this done. And Naomi's wise enough to know. She don't have to see the action. She knows, here's a man in action. The parable, the treasure in a field that Jesus told. He told about the kingdom of heaven like a treasure in the field, where a man finds a treasure in the field. And what does the man do who finds a treasure in the field? Before he does that, but what does he do before that? He covers it back up. Makes it all the treasure. And where's the treasure? The treasure's in the field. So if he buys the field, he gets the treasure. Boaz has found the treasure in the field. What's the treasure? Ruth. Ruth is the treasure. So what's he going to do now? He's going to go buy the field. And if he buys the field, he gets the treasure. That's what he's going to do. Okay. Boaz, then Boaz announced to the this is the scene. Now we move to the city gates where the elders sat and where business is transacted. Okay, that's where we move to. There's another close relative here that we don't. I don't think we have anything on that. Okay, if we run across it later, huh? Yeah, okay. There's another close relative here. And Boaz knows this, okay? So Boaz has to handle the other relative before he can get to buy in the field. And the other relative says, well, I'll buy the field. And he said, you know, you got to take Ruth along with it. He said, no, I won't do it. And roughly, that's the way the transaction went. And Boaz is just as he got exactly opposite of that. He doesn't need another field, but he would like to have that woman. You know, he's just the opposite of that. And so he gets, and then the guy said, well, no, if Ruth's involved, he said, I don't want. Now, I don't know what the deal was. He might have had a wife that said, don't you ever bring that woman to this house. Yeah, you know, he might have another wife, but just, he said they'll mess up his inheritance some way. I don't know what it was. Okay, we don't have that. But we don't have to. But Boaz, he has to get over that and get around that. Okay, and he does. Because what? He will not rest until he accomplishes something. He won't do that. All right. Today you're witnesses that I have brought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, Mahlon, and have also acquired Ruth, the Moabitess, Malon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear among the family or from his hometown. Today, your witnesses. And I think they took a sandal off. That somehow that symbolized that this contract was valid and good. Somehow that sealed the deal. Okay, then the elders of all the people at the gates, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrath and be famous in Bethlehem through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman. May your family be like that of Perez, who Tamar bore to Judah. Okay? And so they are wishing him happiness and productivity and everything that goes along with that. And I don't know how she gets accepted so easily here, except she does, being a Moabite. I don't know how she gets there. Boaz completed the transaction. Okay, now that's the story of Ruth. Let's talk about, we got just a couple minutes left. Let's talk about what made Ruth successful. Now, yes, I know God's in the program. We know that. So you can't just say, well, God. Well, all right. I mean, I get that. Okay, but what did she do that made her successful? Yeah. And how would you know ahead of time where that's going to take you? But she did that. Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Oh, yeah, we got more. We got lots of more. Have you ever noticed time and time again that little gal that's willing to work gets a lion's share? You go to the, if you're, I can't call his name. Anyway, it was Abraham's servant that went to get a wife for Isaac. And he gets up there and he prays ahead of time. He says, I'll ask somebody for water. And if she'll give me water, well, that'll be the one. But she not only gives him water, but she offers to water 10 camels. I mean, that's a job. That's a job. But that's what she does. And what did he say? Thank you, Lord. But you'll find that, yeah. The willing to work. Willing to work. And she doesn't have to be the smartest gal either, but it sounds like she's smart enough to do this. Go ahead. Yes. She took instructions from Boaz. She takes instructions from Naomi. Exactly. Yeah, great. Yeah, and she's going to create this whole new genre for her and interpret that to, we'll say, to the children or whatever. Yeah, that has to be, yeah, ground through her. Go ahead. Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up, Lisa. Yeah. Which I was kind of overlooking that. But this is about Naomi getting her life back. And the story doesn't end where we ended it. The story ends with her with this baby, Naomi, with the baby in her arms. It's just how the story ends. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up about her. I had forgotten that, to be honest with you. Someone else. Anyway, Ruth, I hope you like Ruth. I just love her. I just think she's marvelous. Okay, and what is she doing? She's living life. She's out there living life. That's what she's doing, as best she can. Okay, well let's close in prayer. Lord, we thank you for Ruth, these great heroines of the Bible, and. Lord, just help us to understand how they related to you, how they related to other people, and they brought such meaning and purpose to their own life doing that. Help us to find that meaning and purpose in our lives as we live in this day. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Good job, guys. Oh, next week, Bathsheba. This will not be as pretty as it was this week. We'll do all right, but it won't be as pretty as it was this week. Thank you.